Hello, KFI. This is Frank Altman again, speaking from the studios of the British Broadcasting Corporation, London. One night just recently, at about 10 o'clock, I was going into a London tube station, that's subway to ULA, and I noticed a good many people carrying rolls of bedding as well as one or two battered suitcases, obviously preparing to spend the night. When I arrived about two levels down, where rows of cots are set up on the train platforms, I saw quite a number of other people already bedded down for the night, with their meager belongings piled on and under the beds, as well as on the train platform. At the height of the buzz bombs, these platforms were the seething mass of humanity, all trying to snatch a few hours' sleep. The lucky few who were early arrivals got the beds. The rest slept on blankets and mats spread on the platform, and many were sleeping on the cement itself, with or without a pillow, and with just a coat for covering. I couldn't help wondering, what were the few precious belongings packed so hurriedly in those battered suitcases? And this was all particularly touching to me in the case of the very old and the very young. The war becomes very real to you when you see an old couple of about 70 and a child of only 3 or 4 side by side, trying to sleep in the confusion of trains coming and going every few minutes. Add to this the confusion of thousands of people who, as they get on and off the trains, have to wend their way through these sleeping forms. All this is hardly a picture conducive to restful sleep. I also realized that most of these people had a full day's work ahead of them. Naturally, the number still sleeping in the tube stations is much smaller now, but I wondered why people were still sleeping down there at all. And then it dawned on me that here was the proof of the housing shortage in London today. These were the people who were the military targets of Hitler's bombs. Amazingly enough, I read an article this week in which the Minister of Health over here reports that the health of the British people is, in some respects, better than it was in peacetime. This fact remains in spite of the sleeping conditions I have just mentioned, as well as the rationing, the blackout, and general nerve strain. This is as great news to the British as any news of victory in battle, since the strength of any nation today is based upon the health of their people on which to build their post-war life. You know, I started this talk on the subject of the London tube stations, and I'll close on the same subject, but this time the story is on me, I'm afraid. And by the way, it makes me feel like the man who lived in L.A. for years and had never been to the Hollywood Bowl or the New Year's Day parade in Pasadena. All he knew was what he heard from the tourist. Anyway, to get to the point, I just found out that for the past 6 months, I've been getting off the tube one station too soon and having to walk about twice as far as necessary every night to reach my flat. Considering the blackout, I'll admit I felt rather stupid when I thought of the hours I'd spent needlessly bumping into lamppost and other lost Americans. But who knows? Maybe these nightly unnecessary hikes in the fresh London fog improved my health, too. This is Frank Alban, signing off from the studios of the British Broadcasting Corporation, London.
That was the first talk by Frank Alban. The second, a political talk, follows almost immediately, that is, after 10 seconds pause.
Hello, KFI. This is Frank Alban speaking from the studios of the British Broadcasting Corporation, London. Well, thank goodness I don't have to go around talking about flying gas mains anymore. That got to be quite a saying over here. Whenever an explosion was heard without an alert being sounded, people stopped, looked at each other, and said, well, there goes another flying gas main. I understand the gas companies took a very dim view of this and were about to sue Hitler for defamation of character of their gas mains. Well, if a V2 drops on you, it's too late to worry about it. And if it lands any distance away, there's nothing to worry about because you don't have to sweat these things out as you did V1. You don't hear them coming. I understand they're reviving a lot of old songs in America lately. Maybe the latest revival in Britain will be You Came to Me Out of Nowhere. But don't misunderstand me. The British people are not taking V2 lightly, but on the other hand, as far as affecting the course of the war, V2, just like V1, is only having one overall effect, namely, making the British resolve even more to stamp out the setup which makes the use of such weapons possible. Which reminds me, the British are wondering, as we all are, just what is the setup in Germany today? Maybe the German people themselves are wondering the same thing. It has been obvious to the man in the street that the barrage of V2 propaganda was released to so conveniently coincide with the absence of Hitler from the microphone on the anniversary of the beer hall push. Can you imagine the consternation in the States if another government official substituted for Roosevelt on one of the most important fireside chats? The British read with great interest Marshal Stalin's recent speech concerning post-war treatment of Germany, which, boiled down, stated that there must be an association of peace-loving nations with armed forces ready to nip in the bud any attempted aggression, because history has shown that in a period of only 20 to 30 years, Germany has been able to recover from defeat and prepare herself again for war. To the British, and to all of us, the most significant spot in his speech was the idea that any attempt to rearm should be, and again I quote, nipped in the bud. Another item of great interest in Britain was the outcome of the visit to Paris of Mr. Churchill and Mr. Eden when it was announced that France would have an important part in post-war activities in Europe. The British were proud of this triumphant return because they remembered the last time Mr. Churchill visited Paris was in 1940, when the French nation was forced to capitulate. But this capitulation was merely on paper and not in the heart of any true Frenchman. Another event of great importance to the British people was the sinking of the Tirpitz, since it represents to them the last vestige of prestige held by the German Navy. As winter settled over Europe and snow and mud covered the battlefields of today, Britain eagerly awaited the assembling of the great power of the Allied forces, which will ultimately deal the knockout blow to close this ring of steel tighter, yard by yard if necessary, until it rings Berlin itself. Hope and wishful thinking move quickly, but the fact still remains that the war in Europe still has to be won on the ground and in the air. This is Frank Alban signing off for this week from the British Broadcasting Corporation, London.
That was the second talk by Frank Alban and concludes the program for station KFI Los Angeles.